You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to Spirits Podcast, Episode 17, Stonehenge, with Lauren Shippen of the Bright Sessions.
But we'll get to that in a second.
This has been a crazy week, listeners. As of this recording, we are number 33 in all of iTunes, society, and culture charts.
And we're number 161 overall in all of iTunes. What is happening?
The iTunes chart. Like, we're 161 in the iTunes chart.
We just passed Alice Isn't Dead?
What has happened? We love you guys so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you. Welcome. We hope that you stick around and tell your friends.
You guys have been writing some really, really nice ratings and reviews for us on iTunes. If you haven't already, please do that. The more you rate and review us, the more people we get to tell drunk stories to, and we love that.
Maybe get that top 100. Maybe get some super cool high-profile guests on the show.
I mean, that maybe get a sponsor. So
listen, you know, we're just dreaming big here. And we've also heard from you on Twitter and Facebook, so we just want to shout out a few of you. Luke Boserman, Nocturnal Druid, Philip Ellis, Grace Reloda, Kate Smith, who had some beautiful Bird Woman fan art.
You guys are making us fan art? What
fan
is
art?
Happening?
So
guys,
cool.
We love fan art. Make us whatever you want. We will tweet it. We'll put it on Facebook. We will send it to our moms.
I might get a tattoo of one of them in the future.
I mean, like, she probably will. We'll get drunk and she'll go get a tattoo.
I don't condone drunk tattooing. Anyway, continuing. Violet Nichols, Mimi Vasker, Tiny Dino, who had some very cool, kind of creepy, kind of cool fan art.
That was the first one, and we're just obsessed with it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to make some t-shirts in the future, and I think Kind of Creepy, Kind of Cool has to be on one of them.
I mean, we want photos of that to put in our house.
We do, absolutely. Michaela Price, Beau Bryant, Juanjeda Lita, who was doing some awesome live tweeting and sent us some very cool photos of Philippine mythology, like books and art that they had lying around their house. Mm-hmm. Awesome. David Reinstrom, host of Radio Drama Revival and the new host of Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape by Wondery.
I think it's coming out September 20th, so definitely go and take a look at that.
Wondery has some super cool projects in the pipeline, and we are so happy for David, one of our very own, you know, audio drama, Twitter buddies, nerds, really just making it big. So congratulations. And so we sort of have someone to thank for our iTunes ascendancy, and that is Rose Evelith of Flash Forward, a podcast that we actually guest starred on last week. And we think that that was the bump that sort of got us, you know, into that whole iTunes roller coaster.
iTunes Colbert bump.
Rose is the Stephen Colbert of the podcasting world.
We did a really cool episode with Rose. She had a AI generate a script about the future, which was incredible. And that future happened to feature witches from Mars. So
she was like, who do we call? Spirits. It's an awesome show, Flash Forward. It sort of conceptualizes one version of the future, you know, does a kind of fictional, like, radio drama, you know, immersion into it, and then continues throughout the episode to talk to experts about what that future might actually, you know, entail and how we would get there.
One last housekeeping thing. You guys have been really cool about sending us messages about questions you have about the show, about mythology questions. I've gotten
research.
A couple on Facebook.
Yeah.
What we would really like is if you guys want to send us an email if you have questions at spiritspodcast@gmail.com. We might just read them out on the show at the end of an episode.
Fan mail. Awesome.
It's really great.
And our final thanks of the week is to Lauren Shippen, whose show The Bright Sessions is way above us on the charts in iTunes, as it should be. So good. We love it so much. We ship the characters. We have done some, you know, fan art of our own in our, you know, margins of our notes at work.
We cannot speak more highly about The Bright Sessions. It's one of our favorite shows, our favorite audio drama by far. If you haven't listened to it, definitely listen to it. It is about people with superpowers in therapy,
which are two of our favorite things. So the next season is coming out relatively soon, so it's a great time to catch up. And Lauren had some very, very cool things to say about English lore and, you know, druidism and paganism and Stonehenge. Oh, it's so good.
It was fantastic.
We were drinking some great English pale ale, which is normally not the kind of beer that I drink, but, you know, I like a good pint, like a English joiner or mason or whatever they do.
Amanda's more of a stout person. I like a good pale ale.
Yes, awesome. So welcome to everyone who is newly with us on this ride.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Without further ado, it's Spirits Podcast, episode 17, Stonehenge with Lauren Shippen. Well, we are so excited to welcome today one of our podcast role models.
Oh, podcast Lauren.
Lauren of the Bright Sessions. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's so good to be with you guys.
Absolutely.
Our pleasure. I don't know what you're going to talk to us about today. So
I do.
I'm going to be a newborn babe, as normally happens here on Spirits.
Yes. So I'm going to talk to you about one of my lifelong obsessions, which is Stonehenge.
Yes.
And it's particularly relevant for me right now in my life because I just spent the summer solstice there.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be there for the sunset.
Witchiest of holidays.
The witchiest of holidays. The witchiest of places. And it was very interesting, and we'll get to that, but first I should probably give some background on Stonehenge.
Yeah. Sure. No. All of my, the only knowledge I have of Stonehenge is like an Eddie Izzard bit.
Yeah. Wait, what Eddie Izzard bit?
He does one about like just history, I guess. Mm-hmm. And his one, it's about like how the rocks were like dragged from like 10,000 miles away or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not right, but that's not the right number. But he's like,
10 miles away would have been a lot.
Well, yeah. And he was just like, oh yeah, you know, like they had these people and they're just like, oh, we need to move these rocks. And like, oh, how far is it? They're like, don't worry about it. Something like that.
I mean, so it actually was, I mean, it wasn't 10,000 miles, obviously, but it was like 300, 400 miles that they dragged some of the stones from Wales.
Crazy. And quarries of like far west.
Yeah.
I think
that was the blue stone. There's two different types of stone. I mean, I'm not an archaeologist, so I'm not going to get really technical with the type of rock.
It's all about amateurs here.
Great. But for those who don't know anything about Stonehenge, it was constructed sometime 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, around between basically like 3,000 BC and like 1,600 BC.
Wow.
And they think the first stones were probably erected in like 2,100 BC, but that they were there kind of just lying on the ground for a little while before they brought them up. Very mysterious. And this was before the wheel was invented.
Oh, yeah.
So they somehow got these stones from Wales and dragged them to like southern England for... Who knows why?
That's for Welsh people.
Yeah.
It's quite a trek.
There was actually a thing in the past year that suggested that there was actually a henge built in Wales that then they kind of collapsed and moved because they found some, like, carved stones or something in Wales recently that suggested that they were part of the same stones that exist in Stonehenge. They were like, that this was like kind of actually just relocated. Like they kind of just collapsed it and then brought the whole thing down.
It's like a pop-up store.
Right. Just like a traveling circus of like
engines. It's like, okay, it's been 100 years. Let's move it somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if like the society moved or what and this is my favorite thing about Stonehenge. We still don't know really anything about it.
I love that.
I love it too.
So cool.
I also love to think about what artifacts of ours will societies 10,000 years from now be like, what were they doing?
What was this?
Yeah, like I can't think of an example right now, but like
something like Pokemon, probably.
A spork or like like a Pokedex.
Like, worship these weird animals that just didn't exist.
Right, or like trash dumps, which seem like, you know, churches in a way. Like,
that's,
you know,
true.
Everyone goes to them, they're centrally located, they're big pits of things. Like,
good point.
I think about this all the time.
Trash dumps, that's really interesting. Yeah, like kind of like landfills, like junkyards.
Yeah, or like parking lots, right? Like parking lots seem to be, I mean, the way we think of them now is that they serve like the building, but they, if you look at them from sort of aerially, all roads lead to them. Like they're, you know, big open areas with big lights. Like, you know, it seems like they were some kind of like Colosseum of the 21st century.
Maybe Stonehenge was just a parking lot.
Maybe the Colosseum was just a parking lot. Holy shit.
That's like where everyone
true,
but anyway.
But, well, actually there's not even really a working theory for Stonehenge. There's a bunch of theories. For a long time, people assumed that that's where the druids would have their religious ceremonies.
Okay.
And so the solstice, a lot of druids come for the solstice, and a lot of, I got like my stones read by like a Nordic guy.
Cool. Awesome.
He like told my fortune kind of with these stones with these symbols on it, which is very cool.
And can you explain druids a little bit?
Yes.
Because all I'm thinking of is the Dungeons and Dragons okay. not actual druids.
It's not that dissimilar in terms of, like, druids now are kind of neo-pagans. They're okay. Wiccans. I mean, there aren't actually that many druids left in the world, mm-hmm. but it was revived, like, the druid movement was revived in the 1850s by all of these, like, kind of English intellectuals who...
That seems super early, but I like it.
Right? Yeah. Who were just, like, kind of into magic. Like, this was sort of... pre and during Aleister Crowley and Hall's weird sex magic.
Nice.
Yep.
Sex magic.
Okay. And sex magic written, cults. The mm-hmm. druid, cool.
And druids actually date much further back. I think the first mention of them is the Romans. Like, Caesar mentions druids.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And they were basically, like, really high status people. So they were, like, the doctors and the philosophers and the priests and, you know, kind of the you know, well-learned individuals of society.
Yeah.
And so people thought that Stonehenge was where they kind of hung out because it was mysterious and it was in this kind of magical part of England and it's surrounded by all these burial mounds where these kind of high status people were buried.
Oh, really?
And they've excavated like something like 500,000 bones from Stonehenge from the surrounding area.
Creepy.
That makes it a lot better and creepier.
Right?
I visited it one time and it was just like a lovely little mound of rocks.
Yes.
Like it's a little
very
park right on the side of a like a parkway or not even like a 3-lane road in England.
Yeah.
Bunch of grannies and school kids and just like hanging
out
in the rain.
Some farms nearby
right.
or something like that.
And there's like a lovely little cafe and then you leave.
Yeah.
But knowing that it's surrounded by bones, that's a lot better.
So okay, so we'll get to what's underneath Stonehenge in a little bit. Ooh. But because there is still obviously Stonehenge. but to finish up the druids, so they thought that because of all these high status burial mounds and stuff, that's where the druids were practicing their religion, and then that they were buried in that area.
Makes sense.
Cool.
Stonehenge predates druids by like 2,000 years, so
not quite
probably
right.
not right.
Yeah.
But it still could potentially be some sort of religious temple. The reason that the solstices are such a big deal is because there's this one rock kind of standing outside of the stones that, when the sun rises in the summer and sets in the winter, it's the shadow of the stone cast perfectly in the center of Stonehenge.
Oh,
the
man.
Lone rock.
The
lone rock.
Yeah.
So,
sundial style.
Exactly. So I think maybe it was like a big astrological calendar or some sort of sun temple.
That's so cool. I love thinking about like how advanced like past generations were. Like we give them such little credit, but they like could figure out how the like sun and moon worked.
Yes.
Like, looking up at the stars, wondering things. Like they have their own, you know, hopes and dreams and fears and jealousies and paranoias and, you know, fantasies about the world.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, and I think want to build something tangible on Earth that can maybe reflect the sky so they can really see how things connect to each other. And so what's under Stonehenge that they discovered in the past couple of years is a much larger sequence of henges and mounds and all sorts of things.
What?
So there's actually
so cool.
a super henge underneath
Stonehenge.
So good.
Hashtag super henge.
Hashtag super henge.
Amazing.
And they
it's
obviously
like, it's
cannot...
like the turducken of mythology.
Exactly. Inside the henge is a larger henge somehow.
Bigger on the inside. Oh, exactly. I'm sorry.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So obviously they can't like dig up Stonehenge because it's a
and
sacred
like,
site.
And
or...
by definition, older than existing Stonehenge. So like that shit is old.
Right. They think that it was probably constructed sometime 5,000, 6,000 BC.
Wow.
And they've been using these
that's
like X-ray like lawnmower type things.
Amazing.
They're basically like,
this gets better and better.
A lawnmower machine that like X-rays like the ground. And so this sequence of henges and burial mounds and all sorts of structures they've discovered does have some sort of like astrological reflection. I don't know exactly what that is.
Right.
I mean, I'm again not an astrologist either, or an astronomer, I should say. I'm not either of those.
I
things.
Mean, we could be both.
Both are related to Stonehenge.
So everything's
yeah, exactly. But as we discover more about what's under there, I think maybe the astronomical theory could be actual good theory, because none of the other ones I've heard have been that convincing. The other one that I think is really cool, just in terms of advanced societies, is there's this theory that's come forward in the past couple of years of Stonehenge as a musical instrument.
That's cool as fuck.
Right?
I love that.
That people have thought that it might be a concert hall because the acoustics in it are really good, but then there's this one acoustician, he's like an archaeological acoustician, it's like an
the archaeology of sound, right?
Yeah, basically. Ah. And he was saying something about how...
Let's date.
If yes, if you're listening,
it's also some take a hand out. It's also some like black tape shit too. Like,
oh yeah,
yes, yeah, like the unsound.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just the sound of Stonehenge.
Yeah. Yeah. And recently, news came out that in lots of the like oldest cave painting in the world sites, they realized that the places in the caves that the paintings have been made are where the acoustics are the best. So they
storytelling and shit like that.
Exactly. Oh, so they realized that they probably had some kind of chanting and like group music and sort of like that was part of the ceremony, and that's why they marked, you know, the cave paintings there, so that's where the ritual actually happened.
That is
dope. People were smart and they realized like where to do the thing for the best effect.
People are so much smarter than we give them credit.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. And this one was so involved, this theory was that had something to do with like creating pockets of silence or something.
Whoa.
So if you played pipes in like one part of Stonehenge and another part of Stonehenge, it would actually the two sounds would then make other parts in the henge completely silent and like devoid of sound because the way that the sound waves bounce
that's
off
so
the stones,
advanced.
Which
yeah.
is so involved. I don't know like how accurate that actually is.
I like just thinking about
but,
it.
But I
like,
mean,
it reminds
I think it's
me, like the
really,
vacuum of space.
Yeah,
right? Like I mean,
exactly.
There's so many cool things in there.
May yeah. I say, aliens.
Right. So, if you want to get into the weird theories
yes,
of
we love
how
weird
Stonehenge
theory.
The darkness theories.
So, along with the Druid theory, Geoffrey of Monmouth, who was the guy who wrote, like, all of the early Arthurian legend and
mm-hmm.
Merlin
Solid
legend
name.
And stuff. Yeah. He like, sort of pitched himself as a historian, but, like, all of his writings are totally yeah. crazy. And there's one that suggests that Merlin built Stonehenge mm-hmm. and, like...
Because why not?
Like, flew the rocks from Wales or something, and
right.
then that legend kind of morphed into this giant race, like, carrying the stones for Merlin, that there was this race of giant people who
right.
had almost been wiped out by Noah's flood,
yeah,
and then somehow a couple of them survived
and, like, English
in Wales.
Giant lore is, like, a thing. In
right,
area.
Yeah. And so Merlin, I guess, was, like, buddies with these guys
yeah,
and said, not? Hey, I want to build, like, a temple down in England.
I have a lot of heavy shit to move. That's a great way.
Yeah.
Kids, we're going to play
with.
The quiet game in the car now.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Giants, we're going to play the carry the big rock
carry
game.
Carry the big rocks.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these rocks are 50 tons.
Yeah.
Like, the scientists have not figured out how people would have gotten them from Wales to England. And so, yeah, the giant theory, I think, is a fun one.
That's
and
a
then,
really good one.
I guess the giants just, like, went back to their lives. I don't know if they were really
yeah.
part of, like, the ceremonies that took place. There,
retreat
but.
To the Welsh Highlands
yeah,
or the
exactly.
Lowlands or the quarries.
It's like, I guess they owed Merlin a favor. Like, I don't really
or
know.
So we're gonna go like,
are they like
under a mountain now?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Hey, Baldrick, your cousin said that you aren't as strong as him. Like, okay, it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going.
Oh, fuck Baldrick, this is going down.
Yeah, I, like Merlin's being like, I bet you guys can't carry these stones. Like, I bet
exactly.
you can't do it.
Exactly.
I'm like, we're gonna prove you wrong.
I also feel like Geoffrey of Monmouth also had like a reputation of doing like Merlin could see the future kind of stuff. Cause like that was
yeah.
a big thing in
mm-hmm.
that period. And it was like Nostradamus,
saying,
Merlin,
yeah.
same thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
yeah, I mean, all of the Merlin stuff is so, I mean, he's such an interesting figure
mm-hmm.
and that's definitely very like closely connected with Stonehenge and that
yeah.
part of the world
mm-hmm.
and kind of just all of these different legends and myths. And I mean, it's, and you can't really nail any of them down. I mean, that's the problem with something
mm-hmm.
that was built before written word was really a thing. Is that,
you just got to keep guessing.
Yeah.
Just maybe this.
So aliens are naturally a guess that a lot
always
of people
aliens.
Have, because how else would we have been able to get the stones there? Alien technology, they came. I don't know why
beaming,
they would have helped us
yeah.
out. Like,
well,
because
it's
funny
same,
too.
It's the same bullshit where it's like, oh, aliens helped build the pyramids.
Right.
Why? There's no reason that they would make these giant things.
No.
Like, why?
Yeah, because
yeah.
it's hard for us to fathom, right, previous brains
yeah.
and previous situations. But what I love about Stonehenge is how human scale it is. Like, the pyramids are almost hard to fathom because
yeah.
they are, you
giant.
Know, they're just, exactly, like, even for people now where we have skyscrapers and things, like, it's amazing to just look up at them, not that I have been there, but not here, you know, and
yeah.
just say, like, you know, how is this thing made by human hands? But Stonehenge is, like, just big enough and just far enough out of the reach of, like, practical imagination that you're like, human beings freaking did this thing.
And it's
yeah.
you know?
Crazy.
Yeah.
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 And, like, at least with the pyramids, we, you know, opened them up and found a bunch of, like, dead kings and we're like,
right.
oh, okay.
That makes sense.
That makes
sense. That makes
sense.
Sense.
You know,
checks out.
huge shrine for a dead person. But Stonehenge, it's like, we just keep finding all this random stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's still mostly standing.
Yeah.
And, like, it's symmetrical enough that you're like, something is going on here, you know?
This wasn't just, like, people decided, let's put some rocks up.
Right. Like, it was just like rock very, garden. Like, deliberate, and, like, a lot of work went into it. And then it's, you know, I think they've been able to figure out what it looked like before stones fell down. But then there were people early on who thought that some of the stones that had fallen down were there deliberately as well. Like, the altar stone, which is the one that's, like, flat in the middle.
Narnia-style sacrificed Aslan. Well,
Exactly. Oh, great reference. But so there's iron deposits in some of the stuff.
Love it.
So when it would rain, the altar stone actually gets red sometimes.
Blood everywhere.
And so everyone was like, oh shit, that's where they killed a bunch of people and their blood is like rising up from the stone to like haunt the space.
Right. He's not totally accurate, but still cool.
And then some archaeologists came along and they were like, no, it's just iron. Like, it's fine.
I want to believe.
It's like the thing that rust happens from.
Yeah, exactly. But they did find some, like a good number of like animal bones that have clearly been slaughtered there. So I think there were some sort of animal sacrifices that occurred
on that land.
Probably
a lot of horses.
Like a lot of goats.
Yeah.
I mean, sacrificing, I feel like, was kind of par for the course. And you would, like, drink the blood and eat the goat and kind of, you know, make things of its bones or
its
skin.
That's what the gods want.
Exactly.
Right. Lots of Christians around the world still do it in bread form, allegorical form.
That's true.
Yeah.
Drink the blood and eat the body.
Yeah.
It's always
I distinctly remember as a kid finally putting that together being like, no!
Why would I do that?
But yeah, depending on what denomination you are, it's like you think it's either metaphorical or you really think that it's...
Oh, no. We were raised Catholic.
Yeah.
So then it really
is literally the blood. It transformed and we're like...
Can't have blood till you're 21, though. Sorry, kids.
Exactly.
No, not true. No, you can do it as soon as you're
converted. It's like sort of mixed with like water down.
I remember going to a Lutheran service one time and they had like little like sample cups with
like little
individual wine. Yeah. I think it was around the swine flu time. So they're being like very cautious, but I was like, freaking makes so much sense. Thank you.
The Protestants get like real bread too, though. Like get the dumbass wafers.
Do they get real bread?
I mean, I'm Episcopalian and we get the little wafers too.
There's some like, I think like Baptists and like Lutherans.
Yeah, you get pita bread sometimes.
Because like my, I was a religious studies major in college and my professor who I had multiple times was some sort of Protestant. And she's like, one day we were super hungry after a church service. And so like we had leftover bread from the sermon. We just like made PB&Js.
I'm like, what?
That's so great.
There is something, another stone at Stonehenge that points north that they think that like, you know, that was them trying to find like the North Star or something. Or I mean, the astronomical theories tend to be the strongest.
That makes the most sense because that's something that we can fact check. Like, you know, even though it's been several millennia, the sun still rises in the same place more or less than it used to. So being able, like, that's why I think the shadow falling, you know, in the right direction, like, that's why it seems so compelling to me personally, just because, you know, that's how that view looked the same, you know, when they first arrived.
Well, that is something that I do wonder about because, you know, I know that the universe is expanding slowly and that, like, as we, you know, circle the sun and do our rotations and everything, we kind of change positions.
Mm-hmm.
That 5,000 years ago, would it have been the same?
I think
how
mostly.
Much have we moved?
I mean, not that much,
right?
So, I mean, like, the magnetic poles of the Earth shift slowly over time.
Right.
Real technical this episode.
Really got into it.
I'm really concentrating here. And obviously stars, you know, grow and die and come in and out of vision. But I'm pretty certain that the equinoxes and the sort of path of the sun is generally pretty much almost the same.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, also there were probably slightly different stars back then.
For sure.
Constellations are a bit different.
Right. So I don't know how well documented we...
I think any shift of the sun's path would have been sort of not measurable by human scale.
Yeah. So Stonehenge is probably still the same that it has been for thousands of years.
Wild guess.
I believe you.
I can really at least say things convincingly, regardless of how much
that
I believe
them.
Exactly. That was good. It's enough confidence.
that's my whole thing in life. Like yesterday, I just walked into a hotel to use their lobby.
Julia and I play Pokemon Go.
So okay, this is the story. Julia and I are were walking around one evening. I met up with her after we had had separate plans, and we needed just somewhere to hang out. It was 90 degrees in Manhattan in the summer. We wanted to sit down somewhere.
Air conditioning and Wi-Fi, that's all we wanted.
Yeah, right. It's Times Square, which is the you know,
the worst.
Anus of humanity,
yes,
if you will.
Yes, that's the world.
Really just going for it there. So couldn't sit in the restaurant because then you would have paid for something. Couldn't go to a bar because you can't bring ice cream in, which you wanted to do. So what do you do? Logically, listeners, you just confidently stroll into a hotel lobby to sit in their beautiful, well-apportioned, frigidly air-conditioned, outlet-rich lobby. So sat there, ate our ice cream, charged our phones, played Pokemon Go, friggin' hotspots all over the place, or whatever.
So good.
Times Square, great. And just sat there for a bit. Point being, you know, do anything with that confidence.
I got a lot of stuff from Cake Boss.
Yeah, there was a Pokestop nearby at the Cake Boss, so we kept just screenshotting it and sending it to each other.
Cake Boss.
Great stuff. And so it was like, it was weirdly, like, his head was kind of cut off in the photo.
Yeah, it was weird.
Put it in the show notes. It's funny.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, along with a lot of mathematical equations in the show notes, because we're apparently getting very deep into astronomy here.
Yeah. We'll try to find a scientific written to help back check.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Are there any kind of, like, lesser Stonehenges or related myths in England?
There are many lesser Stonehenges, actually.
Lesser Henges!
So that whole area of England is kind of funky and strange.
Oh.
Because there are all these huge burial mounds, and they're these kind of, like, round, very clearly man-made little hills.
Yeah,
and they, some of them have, like, little, like, doors in them where they clearly, like, would go
fairy
in and,
doors,
like, bury the person and then close it up. And there's also these chalk carvings on the side of hills there. And you see it from, you know, far away, and it's like a big horse, like, carved out of, like, the chalk stone on the thing.
Oh,
and
it's
been there for, you know, 2,000 years.
That's impressive.
And you think about how far you are, and these things are, you know, acres and acres wide. Like, I think the eye of the horse is, like, the size of, you know, five people standing in it or something.
Yeah.
And so then there's a whole horse around it.
That's like those sculptures in, like, South or Central America where it's like, if you see them from above, it looks like a snake or something like that. And you're like, how the fuck did these people make this?
You had to have like a fireman chain of people like,
being like, little to the left.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You gotta move
incredible.
That boulder that way.
And, like, you only have 8 hours of daylight. You
know?
Right.
Like, that's what you're gonna spend your time on? Yeah. I mean, that's what really fascinates me about all these kinds of things. And then there's also Avebury, which is the largest henge in terms of circumference. So it's the Avebury stones.
Also
in England. It's probably like 45 minutes from Stonehenge, like east of Stonehenge. And it's this really cute old English village that, like, basically hasn't changed since, like, you know, the 1500s. That's all the thatch roofs and things.
Cute as hell.
And it's, like, right next to Laycock, which, like, Harry Potter was partly filmed in, like,
so
Cranford.
It's a Hobbit
and, like,
so
yeah, like, this is
family,
like,
trip.
Yeah,
you're gonna go.
Exactly. This is totally, like, the Hobbit version of England.
Totally love it.
And the stones are just all these, like, it's just around the village. So in that context, scholars think that it was, like, a protective circle.
I was gonna say probably, like,
a
wall or something.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know.
Right, like
a way to
magic shit.
Right, like a way to kind of keep, like, fairies and all of these evil spirits out of the town.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons the solstice is, like, a very magical time is because that's when it's assumed that the veil is the thinnest between our world and the Netherworld.
Yes.
And it's, a lot of people think that the stone circles
I've seen Halloween Town. I know what that shit's about.
Exactly. Oh, man. These
nice
references are great.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, Halloween Town references.
Shaky science and the excellent Disney Channel original movie.
DCOM, as I like to call them.
I also 100% was babysitting when I was, like, 14 or something, and it was around Halloween time. And I was like, you know what's on TV right now? All the Halloween Town movies, and just, like, made the children sit down and watch, like, three Halloween Town movies.
There were, like, four of them, that too, because there was Halloween Town 1, 2, and 3, and then Halloween Town High.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I never saw that one.
I didn't see that one either, but I know it exists. Hocus Pocus is still my favorite, though.
Yes.
And Tower of Terror. Those are, like, my two favorite scary DCOMs.
Tower of Terror.
So it's based off the ride.
Oh, man.
It's based off the Twilight Zone.
And it's like, it's like kind of a garbage movie, but it doesn't matter. It's so
fun. We're not in this for cinematic
goodness. It is my favorite, like, my kind of favorite horror aesthetic is like, is either all people in like a mansion at night, all like locked in a place, like Clue, Mousetrap, all that kind of stuff. Or like old hotels. And so Tower of Terror is like, there's a Shirley Temple type girl who like died in the elevator because it, you know, dropped to the bottom. And these people go to like rebuild the hotel. This like this father and his daughter go to rebuild the hotel and they kind of meet all these ghosts. And it's
bad idea. It's cast with a friendly ghost, but with a hotel.
Exactly.
If you can get a really good deal on a nice-ish hotel, there's a reason. Don't buy it.
It's not worth it.
Buy a sensible multifamily dwelling. Come on, people.
And there's, of course, you know, the obligatory, like, creepy children's song. It's like, they sing It's Raining, It's Pouring, and the little ghost
like
goes.
Like, a ribbon drifting down the hallway.
Exactly.
I know how this goes.
There's, like, ghost rain. And it's pretty high-tech for 1993.
I love that genre of media based on Disney Channel, on Disneyland rides.
Pirates of the Caribbean. All good stuff.
Surprisingly good track record.
It's not something that should work, and yet.
No, that doesn't work.
So the veil is thinnest in the stone. So I don't know if you guys ever watched or read Outlander. But the whole thing, and I've only ever seen like the first three episodes of the show.
It stars. I was confusing it with like some movie where it's like immortal dudes.
Highlander.
Okay, good.
Yes, there could only be one.
There
can only be one Highlander. Okay. Yeah, very close. Outlander is pretty similar because it's also about, he's a Highlander. He's a Scottish guy, right?
Right.
She is an Outlander. She's from England. And she's like this 1940s World War II nurse.
Back in time thing, right?
Yeah. Yes. And she she's in the countryside with her husband after the war.
Yeah.
And she like ends up finding the stone circle out in the countryside and kind of like tripping through it backwards in time.
Ooh. Alice in Wonderland time travel.
Exactly. So like if you're not careful around the stone circles, you know, you might kind of trip through into fairyland.
Ends up marrying a super hot dude in the time before,
like, too. Super hot. Sam Heughan. And he wears so kilts and is like, he's got the Scottish accent.
It's real.
Oh man,
it's
real. It's real nice. I have to look into this.
Yeah, it's really, and it's stars.
They go to France,
so they,
like,
they can do really whatever they want.
They can.
You know what I mean?
They can do whatever they want. I'll just suspend disbelief about them like getting dysentery quite soon, but you know, it's fine.
It's fun. I've seen the first like three episodes, but I keep meaning to go back and watch it.
Well, Stonehenge is like a, you know, obviously a national monument, national park type thing, a heritage site in England, but I do know that they allow local, I think, Wiccans or pagans to do ceremonies at solstice time in the actual site, which is pretty neat.
And it's something that they closed down the site because you used to be able to, as a tourist, go and touch the stones, and then people were carving stuff into it and chipping things off and like
Don't be the worst.
Humans are terrible.
Yeah.
And so they closed it off. So you can go and see just the stones kind of from the outside.
Yeah, like a barrier.
But then in the like early 90s, I think all the Druids and Wiccans said, you know, this is technically kind of belongs to us, which it doesn't really, because it predates your religion. That's okay.
It's fine.
But paganism in general, I think, you know, it can relate to. And so it started just as them going to have their ceremonies, and now the summer solstice had, I think, 26,000 people there.
Damn,
wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's Burning Man.
Honestly, I've never been to like Coachella or Burning Man or any of that, but it felt like what I imagined those things to be like.
Sure. Yeah.
There's like food trucks kind of like on the road leading up to it. We got like a good like vegetarian like falafel wrap.
Great.
And there was like there were amazing donuts actually, which is if anybody ever goes to Stonehenge for the solstice, get the donuts. They're really really good.
Good.
They're baked fresh in the truck. weird specific insider tip.
But instead of like general anemic spirituality of other festivals where you're just like wearing beads, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is a, this is an actual tradition, actual custom.
There were genuinely like men there who had long white beards and like staffs and robes.
Gandalf.
Yes, and like everyone was wearing flower crowns, and it was really funny because I was expecting it to be kind of all hippies and druids, and it's actually a lot of now like just people like me who are there to kind of observe.
Sure.
And there were lots of children there, not even like children of the druids, just like tourist children.
Fun.
Which was really cool.
Yeah.
And we, you know, there was lots of drumming, there was lots of singing, there were prayers and things where you kind of, you like thank the east and the west and the north and the south, and you
like
thank
that.
The stars and the moon and the sun, and kind of just giving back to nature and, you know, talking about treating the world well and all this kind of stuff. And
in some ways way more relevant than it ever has been.
Indeed. And this was right before Brexit, so there were lots of conversations happening about, you know, leave and stay. And it was, yeah, it was interesting. Because some
I feel
of
like most of the hippies are probably all stays, but I could be wrong.
You would really think so. It was surprising,
there's some
actually.
Nativism, like,
yeah.
tied up.
Yeah, because it was a lot of the older, I mean, there was definitely a huge generational divide in the vote for that. And a lot of the older druids were very much to leave so that they can kind of have exclusive claim over their land and their heritage, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. Even though, like, there aren't actually that many druids left in England, a lot of them are in mainland Europe, so.
Yeah, and a lot of the national identity of England, like, I'm not an English person, so this is me observing from the outside and someone who's lived there briefly, but a lot of it is sort of imagining a future, or rather a past for themselves, like, thinking, you know, what based on our kind of like vague impressions of what we think it does and maybe should mean to be English, like what did it then mean in the past, and kind of how can we, you know, selectively read, which everybody does, I guess, is.
Yeah, definitely. Of kind of imposing some sort of meaning onto the history of a land or, and you know, 5,000 years ago, does it really, are these people really English, or are they like the few humans that were on Earth, you know?
Right, exactly. Like, you know, does having, the fact that your parents or grandparents were born here, does that mean that you have any kind of claim or relation to people who lived here 5,000 years ago?
Nah.
I don't know. But for those interested in the kind of magical, witchy, giant-y, tradition-y past of England, I recommend the play Jerusalem by Jed Butterworth. Jez Butterworth?
I've heard of this.
Mark Rylance starred in it on the West End.
Oh, cool.
And it was like the most magical line of theater I have ever had the pleasure of seeing.
Wow.
And the play is gorgeous. It's about like old traditions kind of limping along in present day England. And it's beautiful and lyrical and lovely. And I recommend it.
Wow. Ooh. I will definitely check that out. Nice. That sounds very interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
Any final words or?
I mean, that's, I think, sort of all that I know about Stonehenge. As for my own like personal theories, there is honestly some appeal to me of the alien theory.
Definitely aliens.
Yep, it's definitely aliens. No, I think I am of the opinion that it was a religious site.
Mm-hmm.
Makes
sense.
That it, you know, probably took them a couple years to drag the stones, but that they did it just out of sheer, you know, human numbers.
Yeah. So those Easter Island heads, historians have thought that they sort of had the stones stood up and kind of like shimmied them back and forth. Like they would have two lines tied at the waist of the head, right? And then they'll have two people kind of at 45 degree angles, and then one yank, and sort of like nudge it kind of down
that
the road.
That would take decades.
Cha-cha down to Southern England.
South America in this case. But yeah, no,
oh,
Southern
sorry.
England. Yeah. But I'll show you the moving image file when we're done.
So my gosh. That's crazy. The other funny theory that I think that reminds me of is, you know how, like, the henge itself is, like, kind of as a singular thing is two stones with a
stone on top of it.
Yeah,
with a hat.
Yeah, pie, exactly. And there was one guy who thought that it was just initially supposed to be all just standing stones, because that's what they are at Avebury, and those are a little bit older, I think.
Yeah.
And that a stone accidentally broke in half, so they just, like, threw it on top of there and thought, no, that looks nice. And I love that, because that's such a cavalier theory of that it was, like a
so
mistake.
So human, too.
Probably closer to the truth, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're making a nice cake, the frosting gets smeared, you're like, that's a flower now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I'm just going to work it out, and that's, oh,
it's
actually, like, that better than what I had initially planned.
The stone is here now. We're not taking it away.
Right, exactly. But God, why would they spend all of their time? Like, it's so hard to live back then and to hunt and survive. That
exactly.
Why spend your time shimmying stones down from whales?
So humans are great.
Oh, humans are great.
Great. And you are great.
So
thank you so much, Lauren, for coming over and telling us all about Stonehenge.
Lauren, do you have anything you want to plug? You're like the first person we've had that actually like can plug things. So go ahead.
Plug my own podcast, which is an audio drama, so it's fiction, but it's called The Bright Sessions, and
it's amazing,
so good, hype.
Oh, thanks, guys. It's about people with supernatural abilities in therapy, so if that's something that floats your boat, or you think might float your boat, check it out. Our season 3 will be coming out in October-ish, so catch up now, and thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Yay.
Spirits was created by Julia Shafini and me, Amanda McLaughlin. It's edited by Eric Schneider with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Subscribe to Spirits on your preferred podcast app to make sure you never miss an episode. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr at Spirits Podcast.
On our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, you can sign up for exclusive content like behind-the-scenes photos, audio extras, director's commentary, blooper reels, and beautiful recipe cards with custom drink and snack pairings.
If you like the show, please share with your friends and leave us a review on iTunes. It really does help.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.